thank you all for being here, and we would like to start by excusing our Lieutenant Governor. He may be joining us soon, but he had an important conflicting matter that he needed to deal with, so we told him we'd get started and he can join us in progress. So the meeting officially called to order, and first matter on the agenda is approval of our minutes of our meeting November 12th, 2019. Entertain a motion.
So moved.
Thank you, Dave. Motion has been made that we approve the minutes. We have a second.
Second
by Mayor Walker. All in favor of that motion say aye.
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 Any opposed? Motion carries. The minutes are approved. And, Tyler and staff for helping with those minutes. We appreciate that. So the next item on the agenda is for public comment. This is a matter that, or an item that we put on our agenda to entertain any comments from the public. We have a few members here. Anyone here that would like to comment on anything pertaining to our work? We're not an authority. Not seeing any hands or no one coming forward. We'll move forward with the agenda. So I'd like to move on to the next item, which is the work that's being done on the RFPs. And with that, we'll turn time over to our executive director, Allen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Wanted to give you a little update on where things are. As you know, we're trying to build a consulting team that can help us answer some of the questions we've got and lay the groundwork for the next important steps. We currently have three solicitations out to the public. One is for PR communications help. It'll be helping us develop a website and branding, logo, communications plan, etc. That RFP closes tomorrow, and we currently have, I think, 9 or 10 applicants in process that have indicated an interest. And so we hope that those come through. Let me just mention, I'm going to describe these RFPs. The next step is we need to develop teams of at least three to review the proposals that come in and make recommendations to the board. So number one is this communications piece. Number two is for legal counsel. That solicitation closes on the 16th. So we're just, next Monday, I guess. There are four that are in the process of responding now, more potentially that could indicate that they're willing to do that. The third is for a real estate advisor. As we talked about last time, we're looking for some group that can come in and help us analyze the market, look at what opportunities are out there, what the general development patterns that might make the most sense are, help us think through that fundamental question of what's the role of the state going to be? How can this organization representing the state maximize the return to the state and minimize risk? Does that mean selling off the property up front? Does it mean hanging on to it in perpetuity and leasing it? Some kind of joint venture or something in between? We would expect that they will also help us with things like identifying a process for bringing in development partners and ultimately helping us assess what the increased value to the state of our work is. So where are we today as we look at what we do over time, what kind of increase in value is that? That's going to be of interest to the legislature and the public and everybody else. So that RFP, I think, is due, the responses are due early in January. Seems to me it's January 8th or so. And we've had a number of questions that have come in. We're handling all of those RFPs through the Division of Purchasing. So they're the intermediary. If any questions come in, I provide a response, but they go out to all of the applicants, and we're trying to make sure that this thing is just squeaky clean, objective, et cetera. The fourth area that we're working on, with great help from Jim and his team at the Division of Facilities and Construction Management, is looking at site characterization, making sure we've got a good understanding of what's going on at the site. So it's wetlands delineation, environmental review, cultural resources, maybe updating the ALTA survey, make sure that we've got all of the conservation easements and other easements that are identified. And then at some point in the not too distant future, we've got to be doing some geotechnical work to see if we've got issues with soils or other things that would affect what can be built there and how. Jim, I should probably let you talk to this, but they're going to run that RFP through DFCM, and we think, based on initial information we have, that the cost of that's going to be under $100,000, which will allow them to directly contract with a civil engineering firm without having to go through a competitive process. And I don't want to speak for you, Jim, but I think we've talked about, you've got some funds that will allow you to go ahead with and engage that civil engineer with the understanding that you'll be reimbursed either through funds that go to us or funds that the legislature might appropriate directly for that.
Or even just when the property is sold or whatever, right? Because right. I've got a fund that is our land option fund that, and then a planning fund, either of those, you know, at some point would have to be paid off, but it's not even in the near future. It's just whenever we relinquish the rights to the property, we'd be compensated then by them.
I have a question. Remember a couple meetings ago we went through those dollar figures? Was it 100,000? I don't know why I thought it was 50,000 that would be competitive.
For?
Didn't we establish some guidelines as to when we would consider it be a competitive RFP a couple of meetings ago?
Oh, we did set up a standard for the procurement that we went through as an organization, yes.
Right, and isn't that a different dollar amount than you just mentioned, or am I just forgetting?
I don't know what that dollar amount is, but this is what my dollar amount is to do it, and
So if we send it to you, then we're not bound by our...
Yeah. So we're technically the owner, we are the owner of the property, so we can use our procurement authority, right, Mike, for that.
So that one's not going out from the authority.
Right, but if we reimburse them, it still doesn't go under our... limit of funds where it should be competitive?
I think it's probably fine. I can do a further review, but my sense is that if we're using DFCM's policy, it would be their procurement.
That's all. I just wanted to make sure we didn't circumvent our rules and go, every time we're between 50 and 100, we send it to them. I just want to make sure it's okay.
And in fairness, the cap is only would require this board's
correct
authorization. So, I mean, if we...
I think it applied to the board, not necessarily to an entity.
Yeah, not... Yeah,
right. Exactly. I think the main intent of what we did, though, was whether it be competitive or not. And so that was the only thing is... I just want to make sure it's okay.
Yeah. I mean, and we can make it competitive if you want. I'll tell you that we use our direct award for, self-preservation, because we do, literally... thousands of contracts a year, right? Mm-hmm. And so you can't bid every one of them competitively. But we do use that as a negotiation tactic, and we do get better costs going direct award than we do through a competitive process. And I can tell you that over and over again that I can prove it, because I'll take something that's on the edge of that $100,000 threshold, I'll put out an RFP, and then when at the end it costs me $150,000. So, I mean, we use it to our advantage. I don't feel like I can tell you with complete confidence that we get the value out of that, but I'm fine if you guys want to do it. I could run an RFP for it too, I'm fine, either way.
No, I was gonna say, I have no personal opinion. I just wanted to make sure that I was hearing one threshold, and then I had one in my mind from a couple months ago, and I wanted to just make sure how they jived, that's all.
So the
50,000 from a couple of months ago was that anything over $50,000 had to get board approval. Yeah.
So the board doesn't have the money to pay for it right now, but I do, so I'm just saying I can get it and do it and then get reimbursed later.
Right.
Or we can, and I feel like we need this information sooner than later. And especially moving to geotech too, because I think that whoever, when you start putting this out, people are gonna want information about the property.
Yes.
And the obstacles that they have, right? And so I don't think we can wait for another funding year to go get funding for this and to do it, so.
Right, and then just to be prudent with our funds, we did just get that ALTA survey, right? And you were mentioning it needs to be updated, or possible?
It doesn't necessarily have to be. We did get an update to it, but if we wanted to have them add, for instance, go to UDOT and UTA and add the tracks lines in the future, planning there, which I think would be valued, it might cost us a little bit to update that. And so that was the other thing that I had said, I think that would be prudent to have that overlaid on our ALTA survey, just in the future right-of-ways. And it doesn't necessarily have to be through the ALTA survey, that that we'd contract with could actually do that on the, you know, not necessarily on the ALTA survey because it's not there.
Right, but like a proposed a layer to show us like visually what's.
Yeah, so that you can turn that on and see what the future planning is right now.
Yeah, I think that's important because anyone that's trained to develop at some point is going to want to see where
we're going. If we do have any cultural hazards on it, or we have any environmental issues, or if we have any wetlands, which we do have some wetlands on there, I think it's just important to identify. We do have identified the easements, I believe, on the site already. Mm-hmm. But all that information and some level of soil information we'll want to provide to people that are proposing. And I'm just proposing that we just go ahead and get that done as an organization. The procurement rules that you passed were for something that the board is paying for, and you don't have money to pay for it. I'm just saying I'll do it as the property owner right now. And then when we sell the property, we would just expect to be compensated.
The other thing,
and if I don't get compensated for it, it's not the end of the world either.
The other thing I'd remind everyone is I believe, I don't have it in front of me, but there's a specific provision in the legislation that specifically indicates that DCFM would be helping staff with these issues. So I think we're okay.
Yeah.
It was with the understanding that that department is already doing these things with a multitude of their state properties from across the state. I say their state properties. And to the extent that we can utilize them, it can represent a savings.
But can we get a visual, whether it's 2D or like a model for Alan to have in an office? Because I think it would just really help for you to be able to talk to people and
drawing of the site.
Whether it's a model that somebody does and or a drawing of the site, every time he's chatting with people and or if we join in on meetings with him, it'd be really nice to always to be able to see what we have with those different layers. Here's where we believe tracks may come in, here's where roads, that type of stuff. Because it feels like we're still talking in generalities, like someday, but that someday is coming.
Yeah.
Fast. So I don't know within that if you could do some type of, you know, just like people do with development. You'll go up to like the canyons or Park City and you'll see a whole model, right? Mm-hmm. With all the topography and everything. I think that'd be nice for Alan to have that in his office.
You're talking about a 3D physical model.
Yeah.
Or
if that's too complicated, just a 2D, just a flat drawing then with
No, we can do both. I mean, there is an expense to the 3D models.
Oh yeah,
it's not,
yeah. But I think that will help discussions.
Expense, but
even full-size engineering class showing might be helpful.
But I think it does help to us to understand what we have to work with, mm-hmm. and certainly it will help. I just feel like we need to get that going now.
Okay, thank you.
All right. Thank you for those comments and questions. So with that, I think Alan is, our director is asking for volunteers for committees that would review the responses to those several RFPs. And he's looking for a minimum of three, could be, I guess, more than that. And these would be volunteers. This would be something you would do outside of the work of the board, so to speak. I mean, it's part of the board work, but not in an official capacity. And it doesn't necessarily have to be three different for each one, although there could be overlap. But any interest in those three? So they are to review the public relations responses, legal from legal law firms wanting to be legal counsel for the authority, and a real estate counselor expert who can help with issues about what the role of the state is in this, what is the returns we're looking for, not just economic, or not just best dollar, but the economic returns with respect to jobs, all of those issues, those three areas. Let's start with the first one, on public relations. Any interest? Just raise your hand, and Alan will write those down.
Okay. When would this review work be taking place? If it's during the legislative session, then I'm out.
Then you're out. I think we want on these first two to try to get them done before the end of the year. And so procurement or the division of purchasing will be working with the teams, find a time to bring us together, provide all the materials, and walk us through the process. So as I said, we should be getting the PR applications tomorrow and the legal next week. I know it's a busy, busy, crazy time of year, but if we can find a day before the end of the year, we'll get together and try to make a decision.
Okay.
I won't be able to get together between now and Christmas, so you can decide if that keeps me on the list or off the list, but I don't have an opportunity at all between now and Christmas. But I would love to review the – we each have our strengths, right? I'm not going to sign up for the legal or the real estate, but the PR, I would really like to.
Thanks.
We'll do the best we can.
How are you?
So did you get some names?
I did.
Okay. So let's move to legal, look at responses from lawyers and or law firms. Mayor Walker.
Does it need to be board members?
It
doesn't need to be board members. And I'm going to be one of three.
Alan, I'll have Jeff Landwerk from my office, the legal counsel in our office. I think would be a good one to do that as well.
Who is that?
Jeff Landwerk.
Oh, yeah, Jeff. Chris, did you say?
I'm happy to support on any or all of
okay.
these as a staff support, so you. Legal would make sense.
We have really been...
Volunteer Mike, but I don't know if you would want to do that.
We've been well served with Chris's help. And but at some point, early on, he said to us, you know, the way this is structured, you really need to have your own counsel on. So that's why he'd like to help on this committee. So you've got some names on that too. And the last one is on the real estate consultant.
And that one is a reminder, that'll be coming in early January, so we'll probably get your phone to take that one.
I'd like to assist on that one too, if you have one.
I'd like to read those too.
If other people want to do it, I'm fine.
I'll just keep my nose in all of it because I can be most brief for it or
great. We got what we need.
Got what we need. Thank you all very much.
Thank you. All right, that takes care of that item on the agenda. Going on to number five, Alan, I think did a great job of getting us an initial draft of guiding principles to force to look at. So I'll just turn the time to Alan to talk about those and to facilitate discussion.
The purpose of this is probably at least twofold. One, any organization, I think, makes better decisions if it operates from a base of principles that all agree to. And I've found in other experiences that if we've got a value statement or a principle statement, whatever we want to call it, when a difficult decision comes up, we can use that as a touchstone for making decisions. A second purpose is as a communications piece. This helps us communicate to the public who we are, how we're going to do business, what matters to us. And there are, of course, other reasons. Just to get the discussion started, and for no other reason, I sat down and drafted some potential principles. You don't need to feel any commitment to these, but we wanted to at least have a discussion and talk about whether these or other principles are things that we can adopt as an organization. I don't want you to feel constrained by these in any way, but we thought it would be a way to at least start a conversation among ourselves about who we are, what we want to be, what we want to accomplish, and how we want to do it. I don't know that it makes a lot of sense to do a lot of wordsmithing today, but if there are concepts or principles or even language that you have, we can get that out there and we can take another stab at this or go whatever direction you want.
Comments from the board?
I think these are well written. Without having any additional discussion to see if there might be anything that we want to add or whatever, I think these are really well done. So thank you.
Yeah, and I like, number 4 is my favorite, where it says take the long view, because it really is more likely to be successful the more like people think out into the future and what's really going to end up there.
Any other comment?
You need a motion?
Adopt, or is this just, are we ready to adopt it?
Well, I think that's the question. We've got a couple of options. If you're comfortable with it, we can adopt it now. If you want time to look at it and send in comments by email, we could do that as well. I just would leave it to you as a board.
And of course, it can always be amended.
Right.
We'll come back to you, Val, on that, but let me just say, and probably this is what I'm going to say is true for most of you in terms of boards that you've served on. I've served on my share, but I don't know of any that that soon after we get started that we adopt this sort of a guidepost, which is, I think, really helpful. Oftentimes, we have this discussion downstream where we are faced with issues and we say, who are we and what are our objectives? And so I credit Alan with taking this on and helping us think about these issues really early on. So let's go back to you, Val. Would you like to make a motion?
Yeah, I love these principles, and you know, keeping in mind that down the road if we want to amend them, we certainly can. I would move that we adopt these principles moving forward. I don't see anything on here that wouldn't be positive in my mind.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded that we adopt the draft dated 12/2/19, the guiding principles. Discussion on the motion. Any further discussion? Senator.
At the beginning, you said you didn't want to get into wordsmithing today, and so I didn't say anything. But I think number 2, set the standard, looks kind of like a laundry list of things. And I might, just from a wordsmithing standpoint, prefer that was tightened up a bit. I like the idea that we're looking to set a standard, but I'd rather encompass it by saying something like, of what a good quality of life or something like that must be, rather than try to list every area that we're trying to say, look, you can do technology well and beauty well, if that makes sense.
Okay. You have a substitute motion?
I would move to just strike number the set the standard paragraph and then adopt it as it is.
To strike the entire second?
Yeah, I just think that needs some work. I mean, I'm happy to be outvoted 8-1.
No, that's okay. So I just want to make sure I understand the motion. I wasn't being...
Yeah, sure. So my substitute motion would be to take out, set the paragraph, set the standard.
Do we have a second on that motion?
I'd be happy to include that.
I don't have a problem with that. I would just say that that's kind of capturing what's in this statute.
Yeah, that's what I thought too.
Directs us what to do. So it was kind of a nod to the legislature.
Just fine in statute.
Okay. It is in the statute. So I'll call again for.
I would second it because I think that the other thing you're saying is we can put it back in and put something in, and that's valid your motion too. I think you just object, and that was like the weakest part to me too, was just that. And I think that maybe you put back in some other fashion.
So is that a second to the motion?
Yeah.
Is a second? Then moved and seconded. Now let's take discussion on the motion that is before us, which is to approve the guiding principles as drafted with the exception of striking the set the standard paragraph. Discussion on that.
I would just add as attorney that the section 203 in our statute is authority, duties, and responsibilities, and this in no way supersedes that. I think those responsibilities are paramount, and this just kind of helps to focus. So that's how that all fits together.
Thanks, Chris.
How you vote.
What's your issue with it? What don't you like about it?
The laundry list.
There's too many things.
Okay.
Really discussion.
It seems like those aren't really principles to me in a set of guiding principles.
Further discussion on the motion.
I think it's important to include somewhere because each of us here understand what the statute says. The residents of the state of Utah are not. They don't know what the statute says. So I understand why there's a nod to this. I understand where that comes from. I'm open to maybe changing the wording a little bit, but I do think an explanation as to what the responsibility is in some way, shape, or form as part of the guiding principles would be helpful because I think most people have no idea.
Okay. Good. Further discussion. Comments? Go ahead.
Well, I think that it needs to be there, but I don't think we all want to sit here and go around the table and try to rewrite it right now and then adopt the language, right? So I think we're just saying, withhold that one section and let's just work on it and
right
drop
now.
It back in later at another time and take care of it offline.
And that's a fair statement. On the other hand, not to get too technical here, but the motion is that we approve it without that.
Yeah.
So that's the motion on the table. It's been seconded. Further discussion? Not seeing any hands. Let's go back to Lincoln, Senator, for any summation, waiving that. Chair will call for a vote. All in favor of that motion say aye.
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 Raise your hands if you're an aye. 1, 2, 3, 4. Those opposed? 1, 2, 3, 4. On a tie vote, the motion fails. So we're back to Val on the original motion, which is to approve it as written. Discussion on that motion, to approve as written.
My reason for a no vote was just along the same vein, we can either approve it without that and then plan to come back to it, or we can approve it with it and then amend it later, and I'd rather approve it with it and amend it later.
Yeah.
So
okay. I totally agree with that.
I'm fine with that too.
Okay. Further discussion on the original motion. Not seeing any hands or hearing anyone. We'll come back to Val for summation. Anything you'd like more you'd like to say?
No.
You kind of sound like you're okay with that too.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. So all in favor of the original motion to approve as written, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? One opposed. Senator Fillmore, motion carries. It's approved. And as an editorial note, I don't think anyone would object to us taking a look at some modifications. All right. Thank you very much. Let's go down to the next item. It's a pleasure to welcome Representative Ivory Ken to our meeting. I had the pleasure of serving with Ken in the House for, I don't know, about 7 years, I think, 7.5 years, Ken.
You're on me.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Have a seat there. And Ken is here he is no longer in the House. He retired from the House and has taken up work in the private sector, doing some really interesting things with respect to valuation of property. And so our director ran into Ken, and I know something about what he's done because of our work on Federalism Commission. So we'll turn the time to you, and you can describe to the board the work that your company does and how it may relate to what we're doing here.
Well, it's great to be here. It's interesting to kind of be back in the halls a little bit. I was curious as to where to park and how to get in and out, but we got that all worked out.
Yes, you no longer have a parking place. Okay?
I know, no parking. That's like the biggest benefit, right? You have to get the parking. But I think I know most of you. I think I've met you before, I think.
I'm Lieutenant Governor's Assistant. I'm Tyler.
Oh, hi, Tyler.
Nice
and then Chris,
to meet you.
I think we've probably crossed paths. I haven't met you before either. I think I know everybody else. Man, good to see you.
Good to see you.
So, yeah, this is really, in April, I've heard about you, and Ryan and Mark tell me.
Oh, Ryan and Mark, yeah. Okay, good. Hopefully that's good.
So we started down a really interesting process. To be sure, what Geomancer is really about is it puts all of the relevant real estate-related data at your fingertips. It really is an amazing to enable you to make the best data-driven decisions, have the confidence that you've explored all the options, and as you're looking at your values and visions, you can take real data, real time, to evaluate property. It started, Mark Kressler is the founder, he's the head property manager for the church. Pretty crazy history. He retired very, very early in life, had done some commercial banking and development, and decided he wanted to go work for the church, and they kept him on as the real estate manager, and so he's the head real estate manager for the church. And
what church would that be?
Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, yeah. Pretty sizable portfolio, and literally any minute of any day, he's getting bombarded with, can we put a road through your property, a power line? Can we buy some of your property? Would you buy some of our property? And he literally would have seconds to minutes to make a decision of, do I want to even entertain this or not? And so as you got to thinking about, is there a way to automate a land residual value analysis? I mean, market value's all over the place. We saw that in 2008, 2009. And the standard that we have now of valuing property, where you take appraisals, you get three appraisals that are subjectively picked. You know, Uncle Fred could have sold the property to his nephew for a great deal, and somebody else needed to consolidate property, and they paid more. And we pick three random appraisals that go back 12 months and say, that's the value. Well, we know that can be all over the board. And so what Mark was looking at, is there a way that I can do that type of developer pro forma analysis, land residual value analysis? What's the highest use I can put on this property? Build it theoretically, hold it for 10 years, take the net present value. Right now, when developers do that, it takes a tremendous amount of work. I mean, it's all kinds of data that you have to pull in, market data, economic data, demographic data, soil and suitability data, and then all of the costs that go. I mean, Jimmy was talking about those kinds of things. It's months and tens of thousands of dollars. And so he was thinking, is there a way that I can automate that? His next door neighbor is a kind of an amazing tech guy, Josh James with Domo, and he walked over and talked to Josh and said, here's what I'm thinking. I need to pull at least 65 variables in. I need to automate them in. I need to run them through an algorithm to be able to do a land residual value analysis real time. He says, can it be done? And Josh said, well, let me go talk to my engineers. They spent a couple months looking at it. He came back and said, it can be done. It's gonna take a ton of money. It's gonna be really expensive, but we can do it. Mark went back to the presiding bishopric and said, here's what I wanna do. And they said, great, we're not a software company. If you can build it, we'll be a client. And that's what they did. They went out and built. It was about a $250 million development. I wish we had the screens up to show what we've seen. We can do that another time. But so that's what they built. And it really is this pulling data in real time and being able to run that land residual value analysis. Next client in was Colliers. With Colliers, we helped them do commercial due diligence and take it literally from months down to minutes. And so they can instead of sending the typical PDF flyer out, you program in and you run your scenario. You can send a link out. Potential buyers can do their own residual analysis, ROI analysis, IRR analysis, cash on cash analysis, real time. They can change any of the variables real time. So, and then now we're with the state. I was sitting next to Jim DeBacchus. This is how I came in connection with this. Jim and I were sitting next to each other in a meeting, and I leaned over to Jim. I said, we're going to differ on who should manage and control land forever, but as long as the federal government holds it, shouldn't they have to hold our kids and communities harmless, pay the fair taxable value that they agree to? And And Jim said, I know, right? And so we did a bill together that I think I still, Representative Snow, I think it's the only bill I know of that was unanimously co-sponsored by every member of the House to determine the fair taxable value of the federal lands. We held committee hearings to try to figure out how to do that in the typical analog fashion. You know, do you do the comp approach or income approach? And about five hearings in, we realized to value 35 million acres, that was a completely impossible task, and we were about to throw in the towel. And then this geomancer company called and said, we think we can help you. And so we started to look at that. We met with Commissioner Valentine and a number of others to kind of sanity check. And then as a state, we decided to do a demo contract to have them do a demo in Washington County. And some of the results that came out of Washington County, that Washington County receives $3 million approximately and built on 3 million acres of federally controlled land. And the analysis can be sliced any way you want to look at it, but just taking 1% of the federally controlled land that's contiguous to residential or commercial land, and depending on the mix, instead of $3 million in the PILT payment, the payment in lieu of taxes, it would be between $100 to $300 million in property tax for one county for 1% of that land. And so that led to a contract to do that valuation for the rest of the state. We're probably 2 to 3 months away from having that. One of the biggest challenges is pulling in all of the zoning and general plan data. We're having to do that manually. The kinds of other data that come in, the economic data, the market data, the demographic data, we have APIs, and that all comes in as often as that data is updated. This comes directly into the tool, and then it's into the algorithm, and it all is backfed. And but the zoning and the planning, we're having to pull that in manual. In fact, I just met with Cameron Deal before I came here. We're looking at, you know, is there a way that we can maybe standardize that and automate that at some point? But imagine, if you would, you look at kind of in your scenario. We think that we can probably help you in a number of ways where you can basically, what if any number of options, the things that you're looking at for the values and the use and the visions that you have, you can forward test those with real market, property, economic, demographic, soil suitability data, real time. And so you could overlay, for example, you can overlay the Draper zoning and look at every one of those zoning classifications. I wish we had a monitor to show you, but at some point we can perhaps do that. But you could pick any one of those zones and say, well, what if we did this zone? Or what if we took this parcel? You could divide the zones up, and immediately you know the type of return that that would generate for a developer. Is a developer even going to take on the project to do this? Is this going to be something that's economically feasible? Well, then you can also generate the tax revenue so you know, is it economically feasible for the city? And you can compare that to your maintenance costs, so you can basically have a fiscal note, a sustainability note, to know if what you're doing is going to be sustainable over the long term. You can forward test any of the options and scenarios real time with real data. So when you're looking at the kinds of scenarios you're working on and the work that you're doing, you can forward test any of those. So then as you're drilling down to your plan, you know kind of the value judgments that you're making. If you're going to keep some open space, you know the opportunity cost of that. If you're going to program things in different ways, you know what the mixes are, what's going to bring the best return. As we add traffic impact and other data in, we can output those numbers based on, office space is going to generate a certain number of trip counts and those sorts of things. Sales tax revenue can be generated on that. But it's a pretty amazing tool. Some of you know Lou Kramer. When we sit in a meeting with Lou, he just says, this is magic. It's pretty fascinating. So we're in discussions now with National Association of Counties, with some of the larger land managers and things like that. But we think it may be an opportunity and a tool that might help you as you're just vision casting and planning, and then on an ongoing basis as you're managing. The rule, and Mayor, you know this. I mean, you set your plan and your vision for your community, and then what happens to your great plan on almost every case is someone comes in and says, well, that's great, but we want to tweak this a little bit. Well, you can run all of that real time if you tweak it. And then when you're looking at your exaction discussions, you know exactly where a developer would be to come in. Is it profitable for them or not? How profitable is it, and what could that do to helping with some of the other costs that need to go into the project? And so those sorts of things. I wish we could project it up. It really is better to see than to hear me try to talk about it. But
I've seen it.
Yeah, and Senator Fillmore's seen it. I think Representative Snow, you've seen some of it.
You've seen it, right, Alan? I have too.
Have you?
Yeah, and I will tell. It's been in real estate my whole life. It's very impressive.
It's remarkable.
Yeah, just things like, I'll tell you one of the things like I thought it was really cool. You know, if you looked overhead like aerial at a piece of land, a farm or something, and you're like, oh, that looks like a nice piece of land, I want to develop it. The fact that they have little nuances like topography built in, so now they're going, okay, it's a different cost to develop flat land than half this land is the foothills, and once you start going 12% grade instead of 6% grade, here's how much cost in pulling out earth to get roads up there. It factors everything in. I questioned and put Ryan and Mark to the test a little bit. I was like, okay, so let's say it's something like that you wouldn't even think about, like there's a bunch of farmers over on the Tooele, on the backside of Kennecott, that say they just randomly find cows dead where they didn't years ago. So I was like, so it'd be interesting to have factors like that going, is there arsenic in the water? Like all of a sudden is a well that was good for years and years and years feeding livestock have something that could then potentially affect the land because of the cost to remove, like, you know, tailings and things like that. And they gave me a good answer for it, like testing like water and seeing what's in that. So it's really impressive, and I agree. I think it's something that everyone needs to at least see because it could be a good tool going forward.
And to your point, Val, the kinds of things that we have, all sorts of soil suitability data, all the ACS data, the opportunity zone overlays, utility data, the more data we add in and the more we can relate it to value, we can add those things in. We're working with a city on a pilot right now that they said, do you want traffic light and, or do you want street light and fire hydrant data? We said, well, do you want street light and fire hydrant data? And so we just take that GIS data and load it in. And we were down when I was down for the UAC conference a couple weeks ago, we met one of the communities down there, and they said, we've got a parcel that's been highway commercial zone forever, and it's just sitting there. Nobody's doing anything with it. Can you, let's look at that parcel. So we just pulled it up, and I mean, to your point, April, we ran the topography and the soils, and the tool automatically back charges what it would take to remediate that to get it to where you can develop it. So you got a 6-acre parcel that has maybe $1 million back charge to remediate topography and soil, and yeah, the highway commercial's never gonna pan out. So we ran through every one of their zoning classes just right there in about, you know, a couple of minutes, ran through every zoning class, and as they started getting into medium and higher density, they started showing positive ROI that somebody would actually come in and develop that property and it would show the built out property tax. And so, you know, sitting there fallow, but as they started looking at other uses, they're going from $100,000 to $150,000 to $250,000 in built out property tax. And you can do that sort of thing immediately. So you what if, and you can just work through those. So I'm happy to follow up if any of you want to. We're going to meet with EDCU, I think, on Thursday.
I was just going to say, you need to go talk to Teresa.
Yeah, we're meeting with them on Thursday, and you probably, we probably ought to get together and just kind of give you a walkthrough. But if any of you want a kind of a personal walkthrough, I'm happy to do that. We kind of think we're in line to be one of the next Silicon Slope success stories. And, you know, we're from Utah and obviously heavily invested in Utah, and we want to invest in the success of our state. Do some different things outside the state, but we've got some opportunities here to do some things to really help. So yeah, happy to follow up, and I think you'd really like to see how it actually works rather than having me just kind of blab on about it. But it's a pretty cool tool.
It's great. Thank you, Ken. Thanks for whetting our appetite. And maybe when we get these RFPs, particularly the real estate one, we move forward with that, we can have you back and introduce you to our consultant as well. So
yeah, we'd be happy to do that.
Okay. And, any questions for Ken? All right.
I have some new cards here if anybody's interested. I've got a few more in my bag, but let me sold out.
Good to see you again, Ken.
Yeah, I'll tell Teresa.
Yeah, if you want to stop.
Thank you. Let's go to the next item on the agenda. presentation on acquisition of Spectrum. Alan, why don't you, would you mind introducing Adam and what this presentation is about?
Well, we welcome Andy Buffmeyer. He's with the University of Utah, located in the Department of Engineering and kind of the technology licensing manager.
Well, no, that's not the role
I'm in. It's not the one anymore.
Keeps changing. I work with research at the university and that's
trying to come up with big ideas and commercialize and figure out how the university and the state can move forward in new ways. And I've had a couple of conversations with Andy about some ideas that he's got that might be relevant to the Point of the Mountain. We thought it would be useful for the board to hear that as well.
Hey, this is somewhat early days for you folks. I'll make this, I had a little PowerPoint presentation, but I can't show it to you, so I'm going to have to. That's it.
Yeah, I'm sorry. We had to do a last minute change of the room.
No problem.
We don't have the technology.
Let me take a few minutes to talk about Spectrum. Okay? How many people here have sold a cell phone? I bet everybody does. That cell phone is operating on 4G, a 4G platform, which is about 100 milliseconds of latency and has allowed the development of business models such as Uber and Lyft and several other related ones. What I'm going to talk about is Spectrum and next generation Spectrum and how it may apply to what you're doing. And what we're looking at now is a move to what's called fifth generation wireless, 5G, and that 5G is 100 times data rates. It is high redundancy. It is low latency, sub 5 milliseconds. What that means, the human body talks to itself at about 10 milliseconds latency. And there's going to be all kinds of new business models developed around that, including augmented reality, virtual reality, remote learning, entertainment, self-driving cars, factory automation, which is really an interesting application of this if you are looking at any kind of factories to be located at this site. Basically, 5G is, if you read the Wall Street Journal and New York Times, it will determine global technology and economic leadership for the foreseeable future. The US, China, Europe are in a hot race for 5G dominance. The demand for Spectrum is going to go through the roof. It is the wireless enabler. 5G will dramatically increase Spectrum demand, and it increases the demand for Wi-Fi to the point where that's public Spectrum will outstrip supply, and your players that are going to look at this location, 900 megahertz, are going to be looking at Wi-Fi for controlling and developing things. That the more mature the technology company, the more interested they're going to be in Wi-Fi or in wireless infrastructure. Wi-Fi is public. Licensed spectrum is limited, costly, and controlled. There's a high interest now developing what's called private LTE, private networks on licensed spectrum. You're going to find customers for your site that are interested in that. It provides for high flexibility, cost control, security for local area networks. And it's becoming more and more important because we're moving to something called computation on the edge of the network. Think of an automated vehicle going 70 miles an hour down the road. Deer jumps in front of it. You're not going to the cloud and back to deal with that deer. So computation is moving to the edge, to locations, site locations. Private LTE will use licensed spectrum. And what I'm doing right now is looking at how we could potentially get control of 40 megahertz of licensed spectrum in the state of Utah. And there are a series of users that I'm actually talking to, including first and foremost the Utah Education Telehealth Network, which their network application is for support services for remote education in the state. They make money in support of that activity down in your neck of the woods, among others, using something called E-Rate. That's money that comes out of the Universal Service Funds and, in fact, support remote education. That's to the tune of about $16 million a year right now, just for UETN's portion of E-rate. Talked to the Utah Department of Transportation, talking with Utah Healthcare Systems, University of Utah Healthcare, and we'll be talking to Intermountain. I've also had discussions historically with the Utah Olympic Foundation for possible use of, again, spot site license spectrum where they are. We have, and what precipitated this is my involvement with something called the Powder Platform at the University of Utah, the platform for open wireless data-driven experimental research, which is being built right now under a $25 million grant from the National Science Foundation. Talking to you folks, I just called Al and said, you know, I think this is something you might be interested in as you start looking at who your potential customers and players might be to move to the point of the mountain. And if you're looking for bringing in a Fortune 500 technology company, to be able to say to them, here, private LTE, private 5G platform, a private 5G platform is here for this particular site. You'll get a different kind of party interested. I've met with Utopia, we've also got an MOU in place with the rural telecom carriers, all of whom are interested. There's four of them that do wireless services in remote parts of the state, and there's 14 in total. And I'm meeting with some large industrial users that could be potential users of the spectrum. Why am I raising this? Because there's a big auction coming up. There's an auction in June 25th of next year, of what's called the Citizens Broadband Radio Systems. It's highly desirable spectrum. It sits at 3,500 megahertz, and the FCC is going to auction about 70 megahertz of that in 10 megahertz blocks. The current primary user is the U.S. Navy. And that's why they're auctioning it off to preferred access users that would be behind the primary incumbent user. And the U.S. Navy uses this mostly for command and control on their aircraft carriers. Now, there's not a lot of aircraft carriers in Utah. We're looking at potentially putting together a bidding platform to go after that spectrum and the preferred access licenses on that spectrum, 40 megahertz. The reason the rules are kind of complex, and this is expensive stuff. I'll talk to that in just a moment. But if you've got something called a designated entity, which is a small business entity, under $20 million a year of revenue, you can get a DE status, and you can get up to a 25% discount for the spectrum, up to $25 million. So $100 million of the spectrum is $75 million. What it does is it changes the nature of the bidding. Historically, the large carriers would end up with friends who were designated entities. And I'll give you an example. For the C&F block auction in about 2014, Sprint, who I used to work with, had a friend, and they called Wire-Free Partners. They agreed to lease the spectrum from Wire-Free Partners, and Wire-Free Partners, based on that lease alone, raised $192 million of bidding capacity, or $190 million bidding capacity, and they bought $92 million for the spectrum. The FCC doesn't like that pure shill approach, to be blunt now. But what we're looking at is we can set something up here in Utah that includes these customers that we've now identified. And we've got some pluses that nobody else has got. First, we are a global leader in 5G research. because of this grant at the University of Utah. We beat out 30 other city and university pairs for one of two of these grants, $25 million grants last year. We have an existing UETN statewide fiber optic network that is unparalleled in this country. We are a key national E-rate participant, and that's an important element. Like I said, $16 million a year is going into UETN. We have something called US Ignite that actually was part of getting our grant that has an entity in Utah called Utah Ignite. US Ignite designates what are called gigabit communities across the country. We've done 58 of them. They're two gigabit states, South Carolina and Utah. Because of the nature of the targeted state users, include you folks, in the operating structure, I think we can become a designated entity in conjunction with Utah Ignite. Do the bidding. What I'm doing is meeting with some of the larger players to talk about what's your interest. There's this potential that we put this together. And I want to create a team to assess and structure the project approach. There are some initial threshold issues to be addressed. One, I know enough to be dangerous. I've been in this wireless game for about 25 years, but the rules change all the time. So I need to have somebody, I need an FCC attorney who's current with the rules. We need to develop the financial models. Now, talk to the Gardner Institute about that, both the user model and then what the effect would be on the state GDP if we got control of the spectrum. By the way, we would be unique in the world if we did this.
I have a question, sure. Andy, sorry to interject. How would the board, how would the prison land, or how would us fit in? Are you asking somehow for the state to be a partner, or for you guys to be the ones that come in to offer the wireless WIN, like to chat with developers and stuff as it goes along?
Well, here's the model. We're going to, you know, to create a an MOU between the University of Utah and Utah Ignite. I'm picking them. That it could be just almost any entity.
Okay.
And that entity takes control, let's assume we win. And there's some reasons why we can set this up, but we've got a really good shot at winning. We then enter into sub-agreements with UDOT, Utah, UETN, potentially the Olympic Legacy Foundation, potentially you guys for your customers, okay? Think of an umbrella of advanced wireless spectrum available to a large technology company. You would differentiate this land from any place else in the country. Now, how would we finance this? It's not insignificant, folks. Based upon the most recent auctions I've seen, you know, I don't know how much depth. This is early days. I've only started this about a month ago. Started getting some knocking on doors, and actually the biggest positive feedback I had is from Steve Hess, the CIO of the University of Utah, who was the guy that pushed UEN getting access to the fiber optic links across the state that is now the network that supports education to every high school in the state. He sees this as the way to extend that platform. And UETN is actually coming up against the very wall that I said was going to be there, which is they were looking at how they would extend their network on the edge using Wi-Fi. They believe they cannot do that because it's going to be oversubscribed. Yes, sir.
That was, so let me see if I understand. And then I'm going to ask you a question. So
ask me as many as you want.
There would be a private enterprise who would bid and hopefully acquire the spectrum.
Yes, but it would be a private state Connected Enterprise.
Like a UEN?
Like a UEN.
Okay, and I'm familiar with that. And then it would be the charter of that entity would be for the benefit of the state and its residents for certain purposes. Am I right about that?
That is correct.
Okay.
And with the caveat, the unused spectrum, we can basically sublease to either Verizon, T-Mobile, AT&T, or Dish.
But the purpose of this entity would be a nonprofit.
Yes.
All right. And so the authority as the owner of this 700 acres would be potentially a contracting party to acquire part of that and then offer that as an amenity to a technology wanting to locate or looking at locating here. And that would be an advantage.
You would enter into a lease agreement that you could sublease, or you could just enter into an agreement where this gets leased directly to.
So my next question is about infrastructure. Fiber is something I know quite a bit about in building fiber companies.
Excellent.
So are we talking about a lot of infrastructure? Or are we talking about a pure wireless technology?
Well, there's infrastructure for the wireless technology itself. 5G as a technology.
Right.
Literally changes everything, but the numbers I've seen for this for the country as a whole to go to 5G are about $200 billion in infrastructure investment.
Okay.
Now, if you look in the newspaper, you'll see Verizon touting we have 5G deployed, AT&T the same, but to do the kind of infill infrastructure you have to have. To do the next generation wireless, you got to build a lot of cell sites. Now, last year, the legislature passed a law that allows the infill of small cell sites in the state. Were you involved in that?
Voted for.
Well, that decreases the amount of capital that's required for the deployment because there's a pathway to a simple deployment. For the area we're talking about at the point of the matter, you were an interested intermediate lessee.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to speak out of school now. I don't think the infrastructure cost would be that great. But you would have the ability to articulate that right up front and have it in place for somebody to use.
Okay. I think we get that, and then of course there's some real broad issues like how do you capitalize this company, this entity, so that they have that kind of bidding power.
And there are various ways to do that.
Right.
I met with ultimately the way it was capitalized in the designated entities I've seen in the past is by a lease with a major carrier. What we could do is a series. We want to maintain control. Series of leases internally, and then to the extent that there's extra needed capitalization, we go to either Verizon, AT&T, T-Mobile, or Dish. Dish is about to issue an RFP for a nationwide 5G platform.
Okay. Any other questions for Andy? So, Andy, are you? When you were talking about the grants awarded at the University of Utah, how were they successful in getting the Smart Cities grant? Are you aware of that? Work on smart city technology?
Well, by definition, what we're doing is research on 5G, which is smart city technology.
Okay, so
but I don't know if it's.
Well, it sounds like, were you and I in a meeting?
That was it, yes.
Okay, that was it.
That was the one.
Okay, yeah. Now I'm remembering.
We won, thank you.
You won that. And then part of that discussion was, we ought to be looking at this technology, aside from what you've described as an amenity draw, we ought to be looking at that technology as Draper as a way of building that technology into this development.
It's early days. I don't have anybody who's ready to sign to the commitment of any money, but I'm surprised at the interest that I've gotten, particularly from UEM.
Yeah. Well, it's exciting. Everyone's heard of IoT, right?
Oh, yeah. This is what IoT is all about.
It is all about it. And it will be the future, and it's not that far away, so.
I have a different question.
Sure.
So would you, you're saying, when you said for the area, you can define geographically?
Yes.
And you would just, you're saying just for this prison land area, or maybe the greater Point of the Mountain area, sort of, would it be something you'd want to encompass maybe even some of the parcels around it,
or maybe we might even, this NUCO or Utah Ignite might even do a deal with Draper City, saying, would you like to become a gigabit city without deploying fiber optic links everywhere in your city?
Well, we were just having this discussion a week ago about the fiber optics, so this is what piqued my interest in it.
Well, the point is, 5G can replace fiber optics on the edge. That's what this is all about. And to give you a little bit bigger picture, we have this test bed up at the university. It's a great test bed. We're leading the country right now. By the way, we launched 8 cell sites 2 weeks ago. 8 cell sites, 8 fixed endpoints. But getting access to spectrum for testing purposes is difficult, even though we have got special status from the SEC to do that, because it's owned by other parties.
Who owns spectrum?
Verizon, AT&T, T-Mobile.
And are they the ones that run the auction?
No, the SEC runs the auction.
The SEC does.
Skynet owns.
Okay.
Skynet, Dish Networks owns just spectrum at 700 megahertz.
So the SEC allows the auction, the blocks, and then
yes,
and then people would go bid on them.
Yes.
And a Verizon or a large company, instead of paying cents on the dollar, $100 million for $100 million block, they'd rather find a partner that can bid $75 million for $100 million block, and they may pay 80 cents on the dollar or 85 cents.
That's exactly the way the economics have worked in the past.
And then
The SEC has said, we don't like that because that's a pure shill.
Correct.
Okay?
They're going around, right. They're using the small business front.
We would not be a pure shill.
Right. So, and then you're saying it replaces fiber optics, so it's above ground. You're not having to lay fiber optics.
That's what wireless does.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's what I thought. Okay. I just want to make sure.
Same poles, same.
Well, no, you really have to. 5G is going to require infill.
This is the short distance.
It's shorter distance. Yeah. Although, at 3,500, you know, think about command and control of all the planes that are around an aircraft carrier and the amount of data that's being transmitted back and forth in real time. This is a very good spectrum for that purpose. So you're not talking, you know, 10 or 12 miles. You're talking 5 or 6, you know. But then in order to deal with the capacity of data we're talking about, you'll have to infill more. But let me give you two examples of the kinds of uses UETN looks at. One is they're doing remote healthcare. In fact, extraordinary thing on deep brain probe stimulation for people with Parkinson's disease. You put a probe in right to a point in the brain where the electric communications are occurring, and you want to disrupt those communications. Well, in order to tune that, you've got to have the patients come in. And every 2 or 3 weeks until it's finally done. We're now doing that remotely. So somebody in Moab doesn't have to come to the university here.
You're literally sending radio waves into people's brains. I thought all those emails I were getting were from Crazy Land.
No.
That they actually have antennas.
Yeah. Well, they have antennas in that goes in. But
I think I'm kidding about Skynet.
With 5G, you know, right now you've got 100 milliseconds latency. You do remote surgery, like with 5G. You're looking at a picture to do it. With 5G, you can actually feel what's going on in real time at that distance. The technology colleges, they've got a real issue for their training. They have to do it synchronously. They reach out and they train somebody on a drill press or a CNC machine. They cannot just lecture. They've got to actually be real-time connected doing it. They're running out of it. You know, I met with Darren Rush on this, and he said, I'm all over this. You tell me what I need to do. Because we could just set up completely different platforms on 5G. They're real-time that serve things like remote education, remote healthcare, and I've been very careful about who I tell this about because I don't want anybody else to come up with this. But we would control it, and we could. And I think the risk gets ameliorated by subleasing to one of the major partners.
Well, this is great information, Andy, and I suspect that Alan will be circling back with you and the board as we get going with our consultant and start to put the pieces together. And on the larger issue about this entity that acquires this and the state, that's a broad leadership issue, and I don't know who you're working with, but I would recommend you get to leaders of the Senate and the House and the governor's office and check out the feasibility of that. So.
Well, I was hoping Spencer was going to be here. I've presented to him before, and he was, you know, he understands exactly what we're doing.
He understands it really well, and he also understands the rural aspect. So perhaps with Tyler's help, you could reconnect with the lieutenant governor.
Let me run some simple numbers for you. The last auction I looked at was about 80 cents a megahertz pop. They measure license at dollars per population per megahertz. At 90 cents a megahertz pop, going after 40 megahertz in the CBRS auction would be about 115 million. Now, 115 million less 25 is 90. And I've talked to the Union Bank of Switzerland about them, the backstop money for us. I met with them last week, actually. I said, okay, these are 10-year licenses, can you do a 20-year amortization, which is what we used to do at Sprint? And they said 20 or 25 at 5% interest, you're looking at 6 to 8 million annually. The E-Rate program right now produces 16 million annually to UETN, so there's some percent, and one of the questions I've got is, how do I take the E-rate and apply that to this situation for wireless? And I've got to go down that path. The second thing is, you know, we've got major players that are interested in this spectrum, but we'd have a hell of an advantage. In fact, there's some indication that Microsoft, Amazon, and Google may participate in this next auction. But what we'd get is the right partner who'd be willing to back up that extra piece of it.
You'd have the ability to really truly do autonomous vehicles on this site with this kind of.
You can, although remember, autonomous vehicles really have to talk to each other quickly. So, but this would be the platform that would allow for the network side of autonomous vehicles. If we did this, we'd be ahead of a lot of people. Thank you.
Well, Andy, we're glad that you were here and for the presentation. And I know Alan knows where you are, and our acquaintance is renewed. And I'd encourage you to work with Tyler. That's the assistant to Lieutenant Governor. And see if we can't reconnect, and then maybe have a Lieutenant Governor get with Alan and I and follow this up. But if there's this large piece related to putting this together with this private entity, that that would have to be a statewide initiative. So at least in my view. But I think it's exciting, and it has real application for this site, especially when we're talking about attracting the right kind of jobs and the right kind of industry. It would be, I agree with you, it would be a real draw.
You know, one of the questions to ask your consultants, you know, and in fact, I caught, buttonholed Ken because, all right, let's put this in as...
Yeah, that, you add this as another element.
Add this as, no, tell me what this is worth.
Right.
Okay?
Yeah. Yeah, how much more does that, if is that's that, part of that your tax, yeah,
because,
what break or what would that add on to it?
But I'll tell you why, at least for me, I'm also really interested, is seated to your right is our Commissioner of Higher Ed, and I think this has, and the reason Higher Ed is at the table is because we believe that Higher Ed will have a presence and a role here as well for the, pursuing higher ed goals, and I think this has great application there too, potentially.
Oh, it does, absolutely.
Yeah. So,
and we've really established ourselves now as a leader in the fundamental, the research and the fundamental side of things here in the state because of this grant we got from the University of Utah. But in my opinion, that's well and good. The China and Europe are moving forward very fast as well, but where the real value is in the application layer that sits on top of this new technology, and that's where we're really good. And I'd love to see us as a state be where the new applications start developing on top of these new 5G networks.
Well, thank you for introducing us this, and I think I can only speak for myself, but it's really worth us following up on this, and to the extent that we can take advantage of it, I think it would be worthwhile. So
thank you, and thank you for your earlier support. We got it.
Good.
We won.
As I recall, we wrote letters on your behalf.
You did.
Yeah. Thank well, you. I'm glad you won, and you can send me my little. No, I'm only.
Oh, I'm kidding.
As I recall, though, part of our discussion on the smart city, and it may have interest for the mayor, the mayors, and managers, is utilization of this technology for all of your infrastructure, for your water systems, your sewer systems, your electrical systems, in terms of maintaining not just inventory, but the wear and the tear, and where they need to be replaced, and the roads and all of that, centrally, all that data coming in instead of having to do all those inspections. So anyway, fascinating technology. That's my son works in the IoT area for Amazon, and what they're doing and what he tells me is happening is just amazing. And it would be good to get ahead of the game, or at least not get left behind.
This spectrum, this 3500 is where 5G is going kind of globally. It's a very interesting place for the development of 5G networks. If we did this right, people like Amazon would be saying, hey, we'd like to talk with you about doing things. Now, hell, just recently, just on our advanced wireless research platform, DARPA just ran a project on spectrum usage, how to squeeze more usage out of spectrum. They had 30 contestants. You know who DARPA is? Mm-hmm. The Defense Research Program is the main research arm of the Department of Defense and CIA, and highly confidential stuff. Anyway, they at the Mobile World Congress a month ago, they had a contest on how to optimize the use of spectrum because they see exactly what I'm seeing. We run out of capacity over time. They had three winners. We were there. They did it on purpose. And they had like 100 servers in a box. It took them $100,000 to move it out to LA for the contest. After it was over, they asked to meet with us and the three winners. And those three winners are going to be funded by DARPA to test on our platform in the real world.
Really?
Okay? That's the level at which we're now starting to operate, to lead in this area. Now, how do we take advantage of that?
We'll circle back with you, Andy.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for being here.
Thank you for your time.
Thanks. Thank you. It's awesome.
Sure.
It's amazing.
All right, next on the agenda, and one of the last items is turn some time to Alan to talk about our upcoming retreat. And this is kind of a good discussion that you may want to spend some time with at the retreat.
Well, our time is largely spent, but we have a retreat scheduled for January 15th. We'll send out details on where we'll be. But we want this to be an opportunity to clear an agenda and have the discussion that I think we need to have on where we're heading. As we prepare the agenda, I wanted to get input from you on the kinds of questions you'd like to have discussed. I've put together a list of 15 to 20. We won't be able to do all those, but I was hoping that you might drive that agenda a little bit. So if you've got thoughts today on issues that you'd like discussed, I can write those down and include them. If you want to just send an email, if you've got ideas, I welcome that, and we'll work with the chairs on putting that agenda together.
Thank you.
So again, we don't often have an opportunity to just sit back, have a little time, and get into some details about where we're going.
I bet you have some pretty good ideas on the topics you've already listed off. So
yeah, I'd like to see those too. I can't imagine that any of the questions I have are not already on your list.
Yeah.
I wouldn't.
Maybe.
I have some role type questions, right? Some of these are going to be defining statute, but I think it would be good to go over at the meeting anyway. So we're a government agency disposing of government land. And disposing is the wrong word, right? But what's our role, right? At what level are we there to maximize the return to the taxpayer versus something else that competes with that, right? Go back to our set of principles here, that laundry list of things that I objected to, right? I mean, at what level do these things conflict with each other? Because we, right? I mean, at some point, you're gonna harm air quality through some kind of development, less than others, but then one might be more financially beneficial or better for the neighbors, or right? And I'd like to kind of explore what those conflicts are, and particularly around the role of, at the end of the day, we're still a government agency, and we are here to do the work of other people.
But remember, as a government agency, yeah, and being involved so early, there's also the potential to enhance, as
right,
opposed to conflict with,
no,
those.
I get it.
Right? Because let's just say you take the absolute lowest net present value and sold it without any planning, without telling any developer in the future what you wanted to see there, and turned 500 acres, maybe not 700, because let's say we subtract out wetlands, but let's just say you turned it over to three developers and let them run with it, then you've lost.
That's right.
Then you've potentially lost control. So we're trying to balance not being in control forever, and a government agency not necessarily being a master of infrastructure, of sell, of everything, but also not necessarily just letting some private group pay the lowest value at the beginning and let them run with it. And then the residents of the state come screaming at us 10 or 20 or 30 years later, like, what have you done here? So yeah, I think that's high on the agenda for the retreat, is what are we trying to accomplish, and how long to stay in and stay involved, and at what point start disposing or letting pieces go.
Yeah, and the last presentation we had makes me wonder what role do we have in the ownership of these kinds of things, right?
Yeah.
Anyway, it would be a good discussion to have. Yeah.
Good discussion. Other things.
And we can get into details like what's our role, if any, in terms of approvals of proposals.
Yeah.
Do we want to set up a separate entity that does design review and review proposals, those kinds of things? Yeah. We don't have a planning commission. We don't have a city council.
Yeah. We don't, like, our site is in Draper City, but they don't control what we put there, right? Because we are the planning commission.
Yeah.
So
but you're not going to want to meet every couple of weeks and review
yeah.
applications. So how do we do that? You know, those kinds of things.
But and part of that, I'd like to have a discussion about notwithstanding the fact that we're not subject to zoning, what kind of coordination effort should we undertake with Draper City?
And the other neighbors, right?
Yes.
There are people on the border.
Yep, and the county. And we are tied to Draper City with the legislation that says that they'll provide services. So to say there's no relationship would not be accurate. Another thing I'd like to explore with the group is when our role is, should we examine our role with respect to being in competition with private land developers?
Yeah.
Well, so far, all of these are on my list.
Okay. We trust you then.
I'm just saying, I think if I look at your list, then the rest of the questions will come about as
right.
part of the conversation organically is, what about this? Oh, that makes me wonder this, you know?
Yeah. But, why don't you get us
good,
what's
good
on
questions.
Your tentative agenda, and then maybe we can shortlist it or knock a couple things out if you feel like it's too big to get to that day.
Yeah. And I've got to let you go, but any appetite in bringing in some presenters to kind of give the lay of the land, what's happening? I mean, I had a conversation today with someone from the Brookings Institute who is doing research on placemaking and economic development. How do you create a built environment that advances economic development and innovation, as an example? The way you build things can spur collaboration among different disciplines to generate ideas and research, etc. People around the world are looking at innovation districts. What are they? What makes them successful? What makes them fail? So we could think about bringing some people in, but there's a cost to that, and it also means that we won't have as much time for discussion.
Prior to us deciding if we're going to bring in third parties or do presentations on that day, Will you send us that agenda so we can get an idea if we feel like we just need it to be bored that day and just more discussions? Because these presentations are great, but they take up such a huge chunk of time, then we feel like we're rushed just talking amongst
That's
ourselves.
I was just looking to see how much time. I couldn't remember how much time we had scheduled.
It's 9 to 1:30.
Yeah.
Where's it going to be at?
Don't know yet.
Soft chairs.
Lazy boys room.
Can we?
Yeah. Lazy boys.
We could do the Ramden room if you want, unless you want something larger. But
The public will be invited.
Okay.
And we may want something that's just a little
yeah.
more
okay.
relaxed.
Okay.
But we'll check.
Yep. We've got a space that we could do it. We've never had a space before, but we've got a space. We've got our community room now in our public safety building.
Oh, yeah.
That could accommodate anyone who chose to come. Let us know.
The South Valley Chamber has a nice meeting area in the new building right by the Hill Center Theater that we can not certainly use.
Cool.
Okay. Motion to adjourn.
Second.
Motion to adjourn. Second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
We stand adjourned. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Good to see you.
This is great.
Take care of
yourself. Thank you. Oh, thank you.
We're
going
to do a Carless City. Like Arizona has a Carless City. Did you see that?
Yeah.
The band.
Well, it's
kind of. Right.